And now Morgan Freeman reads the Flask docs.
What to do if the server does not start? In case the Python-M Flask fails or Flask does not exist, there are multiple reasons this might be the case. First of all, you need to look at the error message.
I guess we're going to do an episode.
Yep. We don't know what number it is, but,
23.
Is that a true story?
I said it on the last one. I should know this by now.
We'll just start calling them all 23.
I think it's 23. No title. And just Alan and I again.
Yep. Here we are.
We're back. Again, like the Will Smith song, just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Tyrell's like coaching a track meet.
He is our resident track coach.
Watching a track meet. He's coaching, huh?
He's coaching.
He's coaching a track meet, and Hayden's on vacation, driving to somewhere.
Yep.
And here we are. We're here just by ourselves at the office, debugging a terrible production performance issue.
Yeah, database transactions
and
too many of them is what's happening.
Well, connections.
And, oh yeah, yeah.
Really, I guess you and I right now we're in a mindset. So we're this has been a site reliability day.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
We are today managing a site reliability issue.
Mm-hmm.
You're putting back on your site reliability engineer hat to manage that issue.
Yep.
But we're also interviewing site reliability engineers today for the company.
Promise that's a coincidence.
Yeah. it almost seems like we engineered a failure. Like, we didn't do it, but we could have had the applicants today in their interviews be like, hey, this app's down.
Yeah.
Show me how you act under pressure during an interview.
That's round two. I expect everyone here Monday.
Mm. Yeah, so we've been deep in site reliability. I've gotten a very real reminder that has rewarmed my love for APM tooling.
Mm.
'Cause like we haven't solved our problem yet.
Mm.
Didn't stop us from recording a show.
No.
But we haven't solved our problem yet. We got it hobbling along enough to record a show.
Mm-hmm.
But could not have gotten anywhere without some good like transaction tracing.
Right. And APM on a Kibana dashboard. It's not bad.
It's not bad at all. It's not New Relic, but I won't say that it's I was gonna say significantly worse, but even that's an overstatement. I wouldn't say that it's slightly less polished, but like as far as feature completeness, it's pretty well up there.
It's I haven't tried New Relic, so I can't, do a comparison, but
yeah.
I like it though. And it was cool earlier. You had pulled up a Rails app and we were looking at it in here and you could see the Rails classes.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Independent from the,
Ruby classes, but yeah, that's
not unlike New Relic. So, and there's others. There's Rollbar, I think is one.
Yeah. I've never used it, but I'm definitely aware.
I was going to say Datadog, but I'm not 100% if that's what Datadog does. Yeah. Cloud monitoring and analytics. This is a whole category of application and performance analytics, APM.
Oh.
He found the microphone stand. We're in our new studio today, by the way.
Yeah, here we are.
It's slightly more compacted.
It is. It's not quite the broom closet.
No, and
it's actually great. We don't have all the reverb that we had before.
Yeah, it sounds a lot better in here. I also think that we haven't had time to mount our fancy boom arms for the microphone. So it's like old school mic stands in here, but
yep.
They are not friendly to collision. So this is a whole category of tool, APM, and there's a lot of standardized features and standardized languages and tooling. And most of them have, you know, some sort of client library that will integrate not just with a programming language. You know, there's like a low level SDK, but then there's usually like a framework integration. So what we're using with the Elastic APM, part of the Elastic stack, the Kibana, does have both a Django integration and a Rails integration. So that's what we're seeing.
Right, right.
In these tools.
So it's able to see which class handled the request.
Yeah, and specifically in Django, which view for those of you who don't write Django, that is a controller in every other MVC framework. They call it a view in Django.
Yep.
Django's MVT, model view template. Templates are views, views are controllers. And they did that just to, you know, spice things up a bit, I think. Yeah. Now, there's some philosophy there. I don't remember it exactly, but there is a stronger separation of concerns in Django's template layer than what you get out of a view in a typical MVC framework. Templates do less than views do.
It's just even more confusing because Rails has templates too.
Right. templates. I mean, most MVC frameworks do.
Yeah. Even Spring has some sort of Java template thing. I don't know. That's where I drew the line with my Spring tinkerings. It's I will only do JSON APIs.
You weren't cranking out any.
No.
Markup.
I'm afraid I'll throw Jinja and Django templating knowledge out the bathtub. If I start learning, you know, Java Spring,
your internal memcache will evict those keys.
Yeah.
If you
how do I handle static assets? I don't know. Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Let me look at this and just see. I mean, I think the integrations for Elastic APM are not as robust as what you can get in New Relic. So there may be certain frameworks and tooling that there aren't good integrations for, but I'm looking for the list. Where is the list? Come on. Java, Node.js, Django, Flask, Rails, Rack. When is Rack?
I don't know.
This is a Ruby application. This is a Ruby framework.
Interesting.
There's a little sneaky Ruby framework come up there.
They have Flask in there too, you know. That's kind of interesting.
But see, no Sinatra, and as an outsider, I thought Sinatra was like the second runner-up Ruby framework, but it sounds like it's Rack, at least based on Elastic, what they chose.
Yeah.
Real user monitoring. So this is any JS front-end framework. So there's an integration for the JavaScript client side. And then there is SDK for Go. So that's pretty good. Java, Node, Django. So
just Go in general. No, the framework.
Just Go in general, right? And just Node in general, which probably drops into like Express and stuff. Pretty straightforward. But
yeah.
So it's interestingly, Java, Node, JavaScript, like front end, and Go, those integrations are at the language level. And then they have specifically Django, Flask, Rails, and Rack, whatever that is. So New Relic probably has more than that as long as they've been around. But it's pretty sweet and it fits our tooling. And it's, I can't imagine debugging an issue without it.
Yeah, I know, right? You can specifically look at your request per minute and evaluate that by the score that it does over here. That's based upon what, transactions per minute and time?
Yeah, execution time. And how, so it basically tells you the impact, like it measures the impact of any one transaction type.
Right? And then you can click that view and dig deeper into it.
You get actual, you get.
It takes a sample of pretty much a request, right? And then shows you
an example request.
Database transactions.
The user that was logged in, stuff like that. And one of the things like this particular issue, these are always the hardest to debug because it's an IO issue. We have a sort of unusual IO bound problem, and IO bound problems are really hard to diagnose because you can go get on the machine and its CPU is idle. The memory is idle. The processes are all running.
Disk space is fine.
There's actually, there was no disco IO happening. We have a network IO problem.
Right.
But we didn't have particularly high network traffic. It wasn't like blocking network IO or like, you know, a denial of service type problem.
Right. It may not even be external.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of an internal networking.
Everything optically looked fine until we got in and we looked at a transaction. that sure enough was taking like 120 seconds to time out, and we get in there and all that time was spent opening a database connection. So the database itself was idle as well. Mm. No CPU. So everything that we looked at from like the sort of, you know, the smell test of what's going on with my app here, go look at all the servers. Everything appears to be idle. The problem is everyone's waiting on the network and some connection to open and doing nothing. Mm. So feels really weird to have a performance problem where everything's going slow, yet all of your resources are doing nothing at all.
Yeah, it's almost ephemeral kind of, yeah. You know, it's the way it feels.
So that's what we found. You know, found something else interesting through that mm-hmm. that I think is worth talking about with Django is that Django by default, and I did not know this.
Oh, yeah.
Does not maintain persistent database connections. Mm-hmm. By default, you can set a max age for a database connection in Django.
Otherwise, it's
zero.
Right.
So every time a new request comes in, it closes down the old connection and opens a new one mm-hmm. every time. And so this app's getting a bunch of like automated load. The client that's using it is hitting the API with some Lambda functions, and they've really scaled up the workload there. And what's happening is, it's just opening up a ton of database connections simultaneously. A bunch of concurrent requests coming in, opening up database connections. The limitation is there. And Django was doing that every time a new request came in, it would open a new connection. So it was a pretty easy change.
Yeah.
To flip that on. I think we set it to 10 minutes or something like that.
Yep.
So
5 or 10, but yeah, just, and it's, you know, I don't know. I feel it feels kind of funny getting too specific, but you know, in your database dictionary there, you know,
the config, yeah,
it's another key value in that
connects in max age or something like that. And yeah, so you set that, and so that helped us quite a bit. We still found, you know, we found a part of this application has an N+1 query problem. So that's compounding with the issue is all these database connections in the database is running lots of very simple, but many, many queries. Yeah. And so persistent connections has gotten us to a podcastable state. and then we need to go fix.
We've got a bucket under the leak.
That's right. And so go fix it. But yeah, it's been cool using APM for that. Our heads are in it. I talked about it a couple episodes ago. We're building this new.
We have a new offering.
Yeah, a new managed services division. I'm calling it. It's a full-blown division. We're hiring people for it.
I like
it. It's a full-blown division of the company. And, you know, it's around real-time responses and performance monitoring. So mm-hmm. incident response and performance monitoring for applications. And so it was, you know, the particular app that we're working with is not yet a customer of that service. So you know, we didn't have all of our tooling in place, but it was a good opportunity to really look at the tooling and kind of show the value of it to that mm-hmm. customer. Because mm-hmm. We just went and dropped them in on the tooling for a day to help diagnose the problem and very quickly found our way to it. So I don't know, it's pretty neat to, you know, let automation do what it does and help it help us and give us like a lot better tools to solve problems on a fast time frame.
Yeah. So right now we're using it like a periscope. Mm-hmm. Basically, see where we're at.
It's both a periscope and a canary in the coal mine.
It is.
It lets us know when things aren't going.
Yeah, that's true. Pingdom's sort of the canary.
Yeah,
I feel like. You know, and then it's a great service. You know, to have up this new division.
Thank you. Doesn't it feel good?
It does feel good.
Yeah.
You know, because you'd have all this data collected over time. You've got human eyes looking at it right. And, you know, able to look at stuff and go, oh, that's different, you know. So, yeah, it's a really great maintenance thing as I trail off and look at the look at the pretty charts.
I had to trail off as well because I was looking at something else entirely, which it's quite embarrassing. Mm. I may even cut it from the episode when I edit it.
Well, you can't do that for the live folks.
Well, it doesn't matter because the live folks had no audio. So.
Ah, okay.
So well, we just streamed a wait screen for 20 minutes. I told you it was embarrassing.
Yeah, I got you. Oh, okay.
Can you tell that we've been in incident response mode? Sorry, live streamers, when you hear this next week, we just I just turned the live stream off. You know, we've too many moving pieces. Mm-hmm. What did Ben say today was? It was Flaky Friday.
Flaky Friday.
Flaky Friday, man.
It's like Freaky Friday if one of the sisters don't show
just
up.
Just didn't show up. Yeah, exactly. That's been today.
She rescheduled.
Without any notice whatsoever. that's where we are. So, you know, par for the course, I guess.
Yeah.
Those days just happen.
They do, yeah.
Which is why Friday afternoon deploys are a bad idea, by the way. It's not like exclusive to Fridays, but it's just like, you know, sometimes things get to that place where like this, the everything you touch is going to fall over.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to draw a line, and when you stop touching stuff.
Yeah.
Stop touching stuff before the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, fatigue can set in.
Yep.
You know,
distress.
And then if you're just having one of those days where you just drop everything that you reach for, basically.
Yep. Stub your toe on every piece of furniture. Yep. Bump your mic stand, you know.
At least once, you know.
Yeah.
More than once is you have to apologize for.
So I'm excited to not be solving problems this weekend, although, you know, we still have some issues to work through on an app. Is it okay? It should be understood that it's okay to make a Friday deploy if you have an outage.
Yeah.
If it's already broken, right?
Yeah.
So there will be some Friday night deploying tonight, in at least my future. I'm not gonna sign you up for that, right, Alan?
But I'll see how the night's going, though.
That's right.
You know, sometimes I get itching for that dopamine.
Right. Yeah. <you know. laughs> So, but that said, you know, normally I wouldn't, but if you're already crashing on a Friday, that's the reality. You don't want to introduce the risk of doing it.
I like that we're making that distinction.
Yes.
You know, don't push new features on a Friday.
Yeah.
Is you know, but yeah, definitely hot fixes. Yep.
You may have to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Depending on whether or not you properly classify a hot fix,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, some hot fixes aren't hot fixes, folks. I'm looking at you, product managers.
I really need this feature.
Yeah, it's very urgent.
It's very urgent.
My impetuousness is quite urgent right now. Yeah. That's at a critical level.
Yep. Merge right to master. I don't care.
I'm going to do something that isn't code, though. After today, as soon as we get through this, it's like I'm going to immediately go like mow the lawn.
I need to do that.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
Yeah. Or I'm gonna play with my bandsaw.
There you go.
I'm gonna whittle on some wood.
Yeah,
make some stuff.
Yeah. You got to unplug. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, what we do is just using your brain all the time. Just constant puzzle solving,
right,
in one way, shape, or form. And it is just nice sometimes to either get behind your push mower or behind the wheel of your riding lawnmower or whatever it is. And
I have a big yard, Alan.
Kind of zone out.
I have a push mower too. I push mowed the front yard yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Actually. Yeah. I got into it. But you know, Paige will bring that up sometimes.
Mm.
I'll say something like, I just need to build something. She's like, don't you like build stuff all day? And I'm like, yeah, but that's not the same.
Yeah.
I build that, and then when I close my laptop, it's gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have to open it up sometimes to make sure it's still there.
Yeah. Go poke it and go look for it, you know? And it's a different thing,
it
I
is.
Find. I
like them both, to be clear, right? You know, I have to have both.
I'm in this field because I like doing it. I like building software. I like building tool, and I like building systems, and that's a big part of software, right? You're not just building an object, you're building a system of objects, which is cool. But I also like making, so I definitely have a maker mentality that software development doesn't quite get all the way there. I'm a DIY person. I quite enjoy, you know, I'm a homeowner, I like working on my house.
Yeah,
I have an old house, so it's an infinite, unending, terrible, like money pit supply of things to work on.
Yeah.
I was thinking today, so you and I, Alan, we just finished a project.
We did. Speaking of building stuff.
You like my segue?
I did. That was good.
Yeah.
I didn't know where we were headed.
Oh, no. Here we are.
All right.
We've arrived, but we just built a big set of bar height tables for the office. We've been talking about it for like a year.
I know. Ever since we moved in here.
Yeah. Before we moved in.
Yeah, that's true.
When we found the space, we're like, oh, this wall right here, we'll do just a row of bar tables. We had a bar at our old office.
We did.
We've become attached to it. It sounds like a liquor bar, although we kind of had that. But I mean, we had like bar height counter in the office, and it just became, everyone had a desk, but it was just nice to get up and go float up to the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Change the scenery.
It's almost like when you're at that space, it's almost like you're inviting some interaction. Like you're like, okay, whatever I'm working around. on. I'm totally cool with some interaction. Because sometimes you got to plug in, go heads down, and just write some boring code and get it done.
I feel like at our old office where we had the bar, most of us defaulted to sitting up and working at the bar. And then you got up and went to your desk to put your headphones on and like get focused on something.
Right.
And we liked that dynamic. Yep. And we knew we were going to lose it moving here. There wasn't anything built in. So we said, oh, we're going to build these bar tables.
Yeah.
Well over a year ago, that shit got delivered this morning. I delivered them
and carried them up the stairs.
Well, we spent three evenings building these things out over the course of last week and got them all brought in today. And then I thought about it today. Like, we built something, but we built a physical something, which is, how is that different from building software and systems? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, it talked about, like, I closed my laptop and it's gone.
Right.
So I have to open back up as soon as there. How much of our day, let's be honest, did we spend standing out there just standing, looking at the tables going, yep, those are there.
Oh,
that
man.
Is a real thing that is done.
At least 40% of today.
That was honest. Yeah. And that's like, that's a big difference for me.
Yeah.
To build something physical.
And then specifically, because I was kind of saying this while we were working on those, that like, I get it, like some people are car people, and that's cool.
Right.
I usually befriend at least one car person wherever I'm at, because then they can tell you what's wrong with your
car. That's a good friend to have.
Good, yeah, exactly. Just like I'm a good friend when technology goes wrong.
Yeah.
I'll probably be able to, get somewhere with it. So specifically woodworking, though, and that's I kind of throw this out there because I don't know if car guys get this like from oil and brake fluid, but like the smell,
sawdust,
that sawdust smell that's in our office right now is great.
Yeah.
And so I can turn my back on that and I still smell it.
Yeah. It's still there.
So I know it's there. I don't even have to look at it. And I know it's still having a presence in my life,
which is why I say it's things like that and other sort of intangibles that as much as I love building things for the web and building software and stuff like that, there is an aspect of building that I enjoy that software development doesn't scratch that itch.
Right.
But I think they're complementary.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I went and just sat at my workbench in my garage and built shit all day, that I would get the itch for,
something more intangible.
Intangible and also the systems building part of it,
right?
Maybe I could start building wooden Rube Goldberg devices, I turn the crank and the marbles roll and maybe that would get the same
it might get close, right?
Yeah. But fortunately for me and for our customers and people that we build software for, my dexterity at building that quality of wood stuff is not that good, so I have to scratch that itch.
Yeah,
with
the best
Django
code. Best system I want to work with wood is like gravity.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Just look, it's staying right on the planet now. Isn't that great?
That's the only system that this interfaces with.
Yep. And that one doesn't tend to go wrong.
Using that old Newtonian STK.
Yep. But, nothing even Einsteinish there. No,
so
don't have to think about it.
I will enjoy getting out of solving this systems problem that we currently have right now and doing something with my hands. But I don't know. I just thought it was worth mentioning. I don't know if it's that way for everybody.
Right.
I don't think that is intrinsic to. I think that's a personality trait that I have that maybe you and I share a little bit.
I think so.
I don't think that's intrinsic to software development.
I don't think so.
Although, I mean, I wish it weren't just the two of us right now.
I know.
I can ask that question.
We have no metric to compare that to. So everyone, please write in and tell us all your hobbies.
That's right.
Yeah.
Tell you what, go leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, but instead of writing a review, just write
like what you like to build that isn't software.
With a 5-star review.
With a 5-star review. That's requisite or we won't read it. But and with no context whatsoever. Go do that. And yeah. And that'll really confuse the shit out of people searching iTunes later.
Yep.
People are just like, what is this podcast? Everyone, like, someone, like, three people left a 5-star review, and it just says Legos.
Oh, man, yeah, Legos is, that's a good one, yeah.
Mm. And, you know, it's, I was trying to think of what else. We came in, you know, without a guest. We talked about this before. We give guests the option for a topic. Blake couldn't make it today, by the way.
He said,
sorry, he missed us.
Yeah.
And he is sorely missed because, I mean, like, I'm not going to tee up JavaScript jokes to swing at. So I need him here for that.
Yeah.
But
really appreciated him last week, though, you know, talking about NPM and stuff
good,
like
that. Good show last week.
You know,
I don't know if you've heard it yet, but it was a good show. Yeah,
but yeah. You know, because we give him a lot of grief and everyone a lot of grief for putting JavaScript on the server. And I guess Blake didn't do that specifically, but he perpetuates it.
No.
But I mean, right. You know, there's a common respect there, though.
And so, you know, it's hard to think about. I like to, when we come into shows like this and we don't have, you know, like a guest to beat content out of.
Yeah.
We, you know, I like to draw on what we've done, you know, this week.
And yeah.
Like, this week has been all about like crisis management.
Mm.
So it's hard to get myself like mentally framed out of it. But we are in the new podcast studio.
We are.
I guess we already mentioned that a little bit.
We did a little bit, but you know, we can elaborate. So it's going to be our huddle room.
Mm.
You know, so it's not as big as the conference room. And to be clear, that's not like a downgrade. It's actually an upgrade.
We didn't have a huddle room before.
Right.
Yeah, the new so
our new conference room is awesome.
Yeah.
And
it's like a boardroom.
It's like bigger than the other one, so it's even more echoey. So we're in here.
Yeah. It better for meetings, worse for podcasts.
Yeah.
And so we record the show in our office. So this is a working, software development company's office, which is why we're referring to conference room and huddle room. So like this huddle room serves a during the day purpose that isn't podcast recording, but.
Like
but by night on Friday afternoons, it converts over
to our most important huddle of the week.
Right. Oh boy,
I'm gonna have to refill my cup. That's the other bad thing about a guest not being here. I can't sneak out and do that.
Oh, you can't. Yeah, I can't sit here and monologue without, while you refill your beer.
Yeah, that's awkward.
If you give me a minute, I'll run out we'll figure something
I'll
out.
I'll just sit here and
through the magic of radio. I think oh, we there can we go.
Yeah, yeah, I bet so. Otherwise, yeah. I can just sit here and talk to myself.
Definitely a more intimate kind of space for recording the show, but I think that's a good thing.
I think so.
Yeah. So we're going to reopen the call for guests. I don't have it confirmed, but potentially someone they've been on the show before, but it's been a while, and so I'm not 100% confirmed. But later this month, I think we might have someone that we haven't had in a while.
Mm.
Coming back, so I won't say who, but okay. For those of you listening, totally come hang out. We almost had one of the applicants from for our SRE position come in because it came up in his interview. Like it was pretty obvious he had been listening to the
He's
podcast.
A fan, I
yeah,
think,
yeah. I it was not like in a you know like. Groveling kind of way. Like,
no,
I'm such a fan of the pod. But like, yeah. he mentioned some stuff that we mention on the show quite a bit.
Said, yeah,
somewhat, you've been yeah,
because we talk about the technology.
I think he just talked some major shit on JavaScript. No, that's not what it was.
No,
he mentioned that he uses JavaScript
and
then he apologized. And said, oh, you've been listening to the podcast.
Yeah,
and so he almost came in for us, but
he would have probably just talked about JavaScript and had to apologize.
It's easier with Blake.
Yeah.
He's used to it.
Yeah.
Man, oh man. I don't think, you know, one thing that maybe I can go ahead and call this as a topic for next week, but, you know, there's a new Django version coming out.
There is, 2.2.
And I've looked through it.
Yeah.
Here's what I can say about Django 2.2. We'll tease to it today.
Okay.
And maybe do a little bit further down the road, like a more in-depth episode, kind of feature by feature, after we've had a chance to use them. Have you used it yet?
I haven't used it yet. So I just know a little bit about what I read.
I pulled it down.
And here, so I can go, well, that looks like that'll be cool.
Tell you what. We'll talk about it a little bit.
Let's do it.
I think it's worth it. And you haven't used it yet. I've only used it a little bit. We'll follow up.
Oh, maybe you've got to use it.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
And we'll follow up in a kind of upcoming episode and go deeper after, like, we've had a chance. We get a couple people.
I think that's fair because there's a lot of stuff here.
There's a ton, but here's my complaint. Mm-hmm. And this is not, it's not a fair complaint. This is a complaint that is basically saying, but this software is too mature.
Mm.
You know, big releases for Django come out, not major versions, but a minor version of Django is like a yearly release. And like you get ready for the new features and the new feature list is usually pretty small. Mm. And then it gets into the minor features. And so mm-hmm. it just doesn't move a lot because it already does so much.
That's true. I mean, so how long's Django been around now?
2004 or 2005.
That sounds.
I went to the 10-year birthday party, and I can't remember what year it was. I think it was 05.
We'll call it around there, and we're on two.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It moves slow.
Now, now that said, Django lived at a pre 1.0 version for probably the first 4 years of its life. Maybe when I first started using Django. I think it was Django 0.96 was like this. That was like the long term support. Everyone used Django. And there was this step in its evolution that you never hear about anymore, but back then it was all the time. Everyone was talked about magic removal. Mm. They wanted to make Django as a framework less magic, and there was a branch called the magic removal branch.
I think I remember that.
And it was just like, it fucking broke everything. It was not at all backward compatible, and it changed the way you had to write Django applications because they basically derailed it, you know? They got rid of all the implicit shit, and they said, oh, this is not what the Zen of Python says to do, and they made everything explicit. But that magic removal, like, it changed the structure of every database table, for example, that the ORM created. So to migrate from a 0.96 app to a Django 1.0 app was a big headache. And it was the first thing that I did with Django was lead a migration from 0.96 to 1.0 with a whole bunch of like scripts that we got from the folks down at the Lawrence Journal World, who open sourced the thing. The original, like, Jacob Kaplan Moss and some of the creators had written some of these migrate, and Matt Croydon. And they gave us these were like a couple of bash scripts and like a SQL file, a SQL script that went
through up your database,
renamed it, like duplicated every table and renamed it. And like, it moved to like, from like Latin 1 to UTF-8. And there was all kinds of shit that happened in the magic removal, and it was gnarly. And I lied in my interview that I had Python experience for that job. I was like, yeah, I can figure that out. You know, I mostly knew PHP, and I kind of Googled like Python and Django, and I was like, I'm sure it's, you know, and then like the day before the interview, I'm like looking through the docs. I'm like, well, fuck, this is nothing like PHP. What the fuck is this? Like? It's not even, where are the braces? You know? And then I was looking at the framework, and I was like, how do you run it? Where do you... What folder under the Apache directory do you put the shit in?
Yeah, I was just working with Apache.
Actually, back then it was ModWhiskey. Most people did run it under Apache, but still, it wasn't CGI. It wasn't you hit, like, the URL structure wasn't determined by the folders in your public HTML directory, and it wasn't executing a .py file, like, one-to-one with the folder structure.
Right, yeah.
I had no idea what to do with it. I came in.
As a paradigm shift, for sure.
Yeah, it was brutal, and we were going through this huge
dependent migration.
Yeah, and we were a little bit behind. They were like lagging on the migration, so like there wasn't any documentation for the version we were on, and this whole migration. It was a whole thing, but that was in 2009, when that happened. So Django was pre 1.1 for 4 years of its life, at least.
I mean, that checks out. Like, Flask is just now on 1.0.2.
I feel like that is just, like, perfect being the enemy of good. I'm just being like, huh. At one point, they're just like, I guess it's 1.0.
I know. I don't know enough about Flask to really know, you know, what constituted this jump to one, other than, I mean, I guess it's about time.
People have been using it for 12 years, you know.
I think it's mature. It's 1.0. I guess, yeah, we can go ahead and have a version.
We're probably losing some downloads over this zero at the beginning of the version number. But so it moves slow, especially these days. Not a lot of big features. There's one thing that they've categorized as a new feature rather than a minor feature, and it's pretty cool. I don't know if you've looked at it yet, but it's the new database constraints.
Oh, I'm looking at that right now. Yeah.
So you have always had the ability to create unique database constraints with Django models.
Mm-hmm.
It was in like the meta class that you add to unique, a model. Unique equals true, or unique together, and then you could give it tuples of fields, and it would create a unique constraint on multiple fields. So like these three things have to be a unique like hash together.
Right, right.
So that's always been there, but that was the only constraint that you could actually implement at the database level. Anything else that was like a validation type constraint, you know, this integer field must be less than 10, or blah, 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 right?
Right.
All of that had to be implemented in application code, which is like, you know, we talked about this today in one of our interviews.
Yeah.
That like Django apps, you tend not to like get directly into the database and fiddle with stuff, because you'll change something that like breaks the app's validation, but the database allows it.
Yep. So I just came off an app that was a great example of that. All kinds of magic database records.
Yeah.
And so you could, you go into the database and delete product records and watch, and then go to your app and watch it burn.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you can change the state directly in the database that it is possible. The database will allow you to put it in a state that the application will fail in.
Yeah. Database don't care.
So one of the things that's added in Django 2.2, which is support for a Postgres feature that's been around for quite a bit longer than Django's allowed you to do it, is something called a check constraint. And the way a check constraint works is you set a constraint on a column, and it's called a check. And that check, you give it some operator, some function. What's the word? An expression.
Turing. Something.
Not like a ternary operator. No. Well, you can use ternary ones, but you give it any expression.
Gotcha.
And so what you can do is you can say check. This field is greater than that field, or this field is less than the sum of some column in another table. So any expression will evaluate.
Gotcha.
And what happens is the database will throw an integrity error if the check doesn't match. Just like it would throw an integrity error
if it wasn't unique
for a primary key or something like that. But you can define like logical checks and actually enforce stuff that previously you could only catch with Django, like model validators or form validation
level.
Implement it all the way at the database level. And the way they've done it is they've created these, they took what was already the unique constraint, unique equals true. They actually made an object called a unique constraint object, and you pass a field to it. It's got a check method on it. And now meta, you know, where you used to have meta.unique and you would say, you know, unique equals true. There's now a property on the meta class called constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make a unique constraint on a field, you create a unique constraint from that object. And they both inherit from some base constraint class. So before it was just a Boolean flag.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've given you an object that you can subclass and add multiple constraints. So you can
even use Q functions.
Yeah, you can use Q objects. So a Q object would be a great way to do like an or, right? So your check constraint can be
this or
that, right? Mm-hmm. So that's pretty sweet. But nothing against that feature. I think that's something super useful that we should
seems
do
very
more
powerful.
And more of.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the idea of Django moving to a place where you spend more time implementing check constraints than you do writing form validators,
right?
Or like serializer validators,
right?
And instead, like a model serializer in DRF looks at the constraints that you've set on the model to do form level validation, so that you can catch an error and give a friendly message, but still have the constraint all the way down to the database level.
Right? Yeah.
I think that's a great design, because frankly, other applications have been implementing database constraints instead of at the app level for a long, long time, and for good reason, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, and so also with Django's built-in admin panel, right, I think that's great, because you can also break your app in there, because that's pretty much just a layer on top of your database.
Straight CRUD, yeah, right? Yeah. Straight CRUD. As long as you hit the model validators, which the model validators, unless you define some, usually are like, did you put a number where an integer field goes?
Yeah.
But it's still, unless you do some custom work, and rarely does anyone do it at the model level. We'll
let you delete something that, you know,
that something else depends on, or we'll let you put a 100 on a field that should be 0 to 10, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's really cool. So that's a good feature, not to shit on that.
Right.
My butt here is, but that's the only new feature in Django.
That, yeah.
Everything else is categorized as a minor feature. The new feature
is a feature that other frameworks have had for a long time.
Yeah. And it's just the one, yep. And then there's minor features, and some of these are interesting, and these are the ones that we need some time to go through.
Yeah.
But some of them are really minor. Like the first one is they added a CSS class to tabular inlines in the admin.
So, which how often do you use those?
I don't know, because if you're customizing the model admin, like if you're customizing Django's admin, Django developers, listen up.
Yeah.
If you're customizing the admin to the point where you need to like
change
use a CSS selector in JavaScript in your admin, you've gone too far.
Go ahead and build you a view.
That's whatever. I said this on the last episode. Whatever happened to writing code, folks. Mm-hmm. That's what the framework's for. So really, they added something that I really don't think you should be using much.
Honestly, probably never going to use that.
Yeah.
And will question myself once I have to. But
there's some GIS stuff. There's a nice little ignore flag on contrib static files. They've done some love on InspectDB, the most forgotten management command in Django, which is actually awesome. You plug it into an existing database and it builds models
based upon what's the tables.
It looks at the schema and builds. Yeah. So it's a great way to like say, I want to build a Django app that interfaces with this legacy system.
Data. Yeah.
Yeah. Boom. Here's all your models. And you just start, you immediately like get admin CRUD.
Right.
Like right off the bat with your legacy database. So you can like really quickly get that up and running. And then start building apps around it. So they've given it a lot of love, and like it hasn't seen features in a long time. But I won't go through the exhaustive list. I think we'll save that for a full episode.
Yeah,
and get another Django dev around the table with us to do it.
I think that would be good. Yeah,
but there's only one really big feature in 2.2. And by the way, this came out April 1st, so it is for those of you listening, not super timely. It came out a little more than a week ago. For us, it's only been out for about 4 days at the moment we record this.
So. Management commands, the new force color option forces colorization of the command output.
Forcing color. That is useful. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is somewhere.
Well, I'm going to have to go home and build a toy app just so I can see
it, some Django 2.2 action.
Does that work on run server? Like I can just force color and now I get, you know, kind of like that Go app that that spits out colorful.
No, I think I'll have to look and see. I have a feeling that they just changed how they're writing to standard out so that it doesn't get overridden in like certain terminals, but I'm not totally sure. Not totally sure, but
these are things we'll try out.
We'll try them out. We'll come back. We'll report it back to you. We'll post it on Reddit. Probably get bunch of shit talk happening on us. We don't get much love for the show on Reddit, except for last week. We had a post on in the Django subreddit that people
not sure actually really did, but maybe we stopped trying.
I graveled hard enough. I walked in and said like, we're not worthy of your attention, but that's Reddit. I know this. I've been a Redditor for a long time. I know you can't just walk into Reddit and say, here's something I did.
Yeah.
Because that's just like, well, fuck you.
Yeah. This is buddy, not Facebook. Get that out of here.
Yeah. You're only allowed to post shit that someone else did.
Yeah.
If it's at all beneficial to you. You can get out of here. Which I get. That's Reddit. We knew that was the case.
That's we're snobby over there. No, I've never posted anything on Reddit, so.
Oh, you're like serial lurker?
Yep.
Oh, man.
I have nothing to say.
I am the opposite on Reddit. I'm not opposite. Like, I don't like hemorrhage information into Reddit, but I do post on it.
Yeah.
But like, I have absolutely nothing to hide. My Reddit username is so easily resolved to who I am as a human being that every time I post on Reddit, I dox myself.
Mm.
And nothing's come of that. But until I said it on this show,
Don't do it. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Just because I'm easy to find on Reddit and GitHub and every fucking server that I log into. but for real, like, yeah, so I've just exposed, I don't think I post much in political subreddits, but I've probably just exposed somewhat personal ideas that I've promoted out there. But oh, well.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of thing that bothers me too much. So you're a super lurker.
Yep.
I've always wanted, and I've never done it. I've always wanted to create some Reddit alts, and not so that I can post under those alts and silo my communication.
Mm-hmm.
Purely like novelty account username ideas that I've had. The one I came up with recently was taken by someone that, like, I don't think they've logged in a long time. But are you ready for this?
Yep.
It was Brownie in Motion,
as
opposed to Brownie in Motion, which is the physics term. And I was so proud of that. I was like, I have to have that Reddit handle. Some prick has it.
Somebody's already thought of that.
You, Brownie in Motion.
That's Reddit for you.
Why did you do it? You don't even post. I mean, look.
They're a lurker too.
He posted once 3 months ago, and then like it's been over a year. Brownie in Motion.
Brownie in Motion is a serial lurker.
He probably had the same idea that I had. That's just a novelty account.
Yeah, yeah. He's only ever had the one thing to say with it.
So those come up sometimes. And I had that same problem back when I played World of Warcraft. I had so many like level 9 characters. Just because I came up with the greatest character name ever.
Yeah.
I started a rogue in World of Warcraft this was in like 2007. The rogue's name was Crit Romney. And I was super proud of Crit Romney on Destermath server.
Yeah. He was
a rogue. So a rogue in WoW was not your like main DPS character. Well, actually he may have been. I didn't get that much in the end game. They could get really high DPS, but the damage they did per attack wasn't that high, but you really wanted to max out their like dexterity and agility. Mm-hmm. And where they really shined was like getting their critical hit.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of damage they did on a crit really high, and the frequency of a crit really high.
Right.
And you really wanted to maximize. You know, you could build for like one of those or a blend of them, but essentially it was all about the rogue got a couple good crits in, and that was the difference between beating the boss or not. So Crit Romney was a fucking sweet name for a rogue.
That's interesting. Like, so I played World of Warcraft, have one character, got it up to the ceiling on the free tier, and then I noped out.
Oh, yeah.
That was
after I played because there was no free tier.
Yeah, yeah. I played. Yeah, no, this was like the first year that it came out. So I never get to play as much D&D as I ever want to and stuff, but I'm definitely, my mind is in that realm. So right. Like I've got stories where I've kicked a spider off my leg and then I think like, oh man, I rolled a 20 on my dex. Right. That was good. And so that's in line with D&D, that your rogue, or back in the day was the thief. They get an extra hit, basically. It's like depending on the version, could be a 2d6, a 1d6 on top of their original hit and the damage that's going to do.
Is that called a critical hit, or is a critical hit separate?
Because it works a little different. Yeah. Critical is if you roll a 20 and then that hits no matter what.
But, okay. Does it hit with extra damage? Is there a multiplier on it?
Well, that's it. So like if I had a dagger or something, I roll a 1d4, and then on top of that, I could roll a 1d6. If there's somebody else next to them and I'm like behind them. Back in the day, they called it backstab.
So that was one of the principal, not special, abilities of a rogue in World of Warcraft was a backstab.
Gotcha.
That was one of the very early skills that you could max that tier out.
And so that's why I played the free version. Because I want to say, it's like D&D, but you know, like the computer does all the math.
So like backstab did extra damage, but like if you crit on a backstab, it was like a 6x multiplier. So like you could stagger these really huge bonuses, and then that stacked on top of whatever your critical hit bonus was.
Right.
You could get these like crazy where like, you know, that big boss fights really depended on a rogue getting like a number of critical hits in the 1 hour battle or however long it took, because like you know, they'd be like throwing out hits that are like, you know, 1,000 HP, 1,000 HP, and then they'd crit for like 14,000 or some fucking ridiculous shit. But Crit and Romney never got there. He was only level 9. He was still chasing shit in the noob zone. He was still running around like banging sheep over the head with a stick or some whatever you do in those early quests, you know.
Yeah, you can farm a lot. That's I remember I was doing that with oh man, anyone in World of Warcraft's gonna hate me. The dudes with the horns, the little, you know, the cow guys.
The cow guys.
Yeah.
Mm. It's been a long time since I've been in a Warcraft world. You're talking about the Tauren?
The Tauren? Yeah, I think so. The Minotaurs is
The Tauren.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone. I called them cow guys.
I couldn't remember if they had horns. Yeah, of course they do.
Yeah. Yeah, they're Minotaurs. I was one of those guys and just, you know, harvested leather and sold it. and then, so that was over a Thanksgiving weekend, and then I took my life back on Monday.
Why is that so fun? And I'm not going to call anyone out specifically, but I know people that could not fucking stand, like, at all, just wasn't in their mode to go to work, right? Mm-hmm. They have jobs,
yeah,
because they can pay World of Warcraft bills,
right?
But, like, just hated it. The toil, repetitive, doing something like that. And then they would go home, and I get it, right? Because I would play Warcraft, I'd do the same thing, and just fucking go grind out, like, killing small animals and getting leather and taking it to the auction house and selling it. And it's like, what is the difference? And I could never figure it out of, like being willing to do just, like, toil, work in an RPG that makes that fun, that you'll sit there and do it for hours, but then you're like, man, fuck, I don't want to go to work today.
Yeah.
It's like, you've just been at work for 12, maybe that's why.
Yeah.
I've been working for 12 hours.
Yeah, I've already been working. Yeah.
I've been busting my ass for 5 copper an hour or whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of similar. You know, so I was a grill cook, but I guess I made that distinction, and that's why I wouldn't do it. But plus, you know, I don't know, just something about paying a subscription to play a game that, like, I've blown off enough Nintendo cartridges that I just couldn't justify that to myself in my mid-20s. Like,
paying my game bill.
Back to making beats with Fruit Loops.
That's how the world
version
works.
Version 2.
It might have started with games. I think games, to me, feel like the thing that kind of captured the millennial generation while they were young and got them in the mindset. It was the World of Warcraft. So we're like, oh, it's $10 a month.
Yeah.
What's $10? You know?
Yeah.
And like those people grew up getting used to that in their like late teenage years and their early 20s. And then like people are like, come on, man, it's just a mattress bill.
You're right.
Buy a Tuft and Needle or whatever. You it's $19 a month, you know? And it's forever, you know?
So like here a while back, I looked up something and I don't know where to find that now. But there was some numbers I had found about, like, people were talking about, it's PBS. There's like My 2 Cents or something like that. Mm. They have this, web series that they do. And, so they were talking about, free to play games and are they really free, you know? And I've always called it like the freemium model in a lot of them, but they were analyzing how that's really closely related to gambling. And then not everyone falls for it, but the serial gamblers totally will.
Right.
And I forget, like Fortnite, I want to say makes like $2 million a day or something.
It's pretty high. I think their revenue is getting up into like the billion zone.
Yeah.
So it might be more revenue than that, right? Because a billion is going to be... Well, $3 million a day.
Yeah.
We get you pretty close to the billion mark.
It was two and some change, for sure.
Well, so Steve McBee's peeking in at us. He sees us talking heads in here on the podcast.
What are these guys doing?
What's up, Steve? I don't think Steve listens to the show. Mm. Our friends and neighbors from upstairs peeked in the window at us.
Yeah.
It's good to have a communal vibe in the building. And
they came down here to see.
They were peeking. They walked by. They were peeking at the new fancy boardroom conference room in there. But it's you know, it's a different thing, this mentality of the pay the subscription deal.
I've
complained about it in many different ways.
Yeah, exactly. Like the paying the subscription, you know, I think that's one thing. What I'm not a real great fan of are like loot crates. Like that.
Yeah.
Tell me how I'm not playing a slot machine right
totally,
now.
100%.
You know?
It's got banned in the EU, I think, or at least in...
Well, you have to be over whatever, you know...
The gambling ages.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, like, pretty hard hurt Fortnite in the EU, or it might have just been in the UK, I'm not totally sure, but it was...
Yeah, it was, maybe the UK.
Sound like an American. One of them European polygons over there. it got for good reason being there. I'm shopping for a new toothbrush. Exciting. I know. Riveting. Hold on. I wanted to get like an electric toothbrush and do that. I've never done one of those. I've always been the old school, the old manual, the old stick shift toothbrush.
That's pretty much what I do. Yeah.
And so I thought, oh, I'll get one of those fancy electric ones. And I've been hit because I'm in the demographic. I've been hit by Quip. Mm. Have you seen Quip?
No.
It's an electric toothbrush for millennials, basically.
Okay.
And I think they're electric. Am I dumb? I don't know. Yeah, I think so. And so, yeah, electric starter sets. So the whole deal with them is, it's like it's on a subscription model. So I could go out and buy a Braun or an Oral-B or something like that. And just that's, you know, you own a toothbrush. Do the same thing here, but you lock yourself essentially into a contract for it to send you replacement heads for the brush.
Oh.
And I'm like, I know I need to replace the toothbrush heads. It's not about that. I know that I need to do that. I know that I'm in absence of some other system, I'm going to go buy them every time I need them when they get old and they need replacement. I get it. But God damn it, if I'm going to have a toothbrush bill that just automatically deducts off my credit card, it drives me nuts. You're in the Dollar Shave Club. You've mentioned it before. Yeah. I remember now.
I was about to say,
I'm bitching right in your face about it, and I'm sorry.
It's great.
Not against you. I have a problem.
I'm going to have to check online.
Okay.
Because I realize listeners can't see me and they may not know me.
You got about a 9-inch beard going over there. I don't think the Dollar Shave Club.
I ain't used a razor in like 2 years.
You need to make sure that subscription has been canceled.
Yeah.
And that's precisely why it bothers me.
Right.
Because that's what they want you to do, Alan.
It is. Well, and to be fair, it's probably dialed down. My wife, she uses it. And so.
There you go.
She's good about that. On top of that, I'm pretty sure I don't have a stack of
razors, of just razor blades, piling up.
Yeah, on my side of the sink or vanity or whatever you call that thing.
And I'll be honest with you, I have like a visceral immediate reaction to this, but I'm probably going to end up buying one like this because it's toothbrushes and like the idea of like whether I like it or not, a new head comes in the mail every 3 months for me to replace. Mm. Well, that's. I need to, you know, there's like two things I can think of off the top of my head that I might go for on a subscription model. And it's like toothbrushes and air filters for my like HVAC at home. Cause I always forget to change my air filter, but if a new one comes in the mail every 3 months, I'll just slap that bitch in there.
Yeah.
Like that I think I know, works right? for me.
I forget to check it until I'm like, you know, I don't think it's getting cold in here.
Exactly.
Like, and then I'm like, oh.
Yeah, geez. You open the vent and there's a fucking poodle condensed into
looks
the
like
grate.
My lint trap.
Yeah, exactly. So that I would do.
That's,
you know, you can get that intriguing. That's a good Amazon Prime subscriber.
Got you.
Right
okay.
There that's a life hack that I keep keep forgetting to do, but I don't do it. That's what I can go for.
So the toothbrush, I don't do a mechanical one, but I get elaborate with every new toothbrush that I get, and it's kind of this bittersweet relationship with a toothbrush.
The sunset one,
and it feels kind of wrong because it's a piece of plastic that I'm throwing in the trash can.
That's part of my problem. You know my deal.
I know it's going to be there pretty much forever.
Yeah.
And, but I get so excited over a new toothbrush.
That's two mic stand bumps, and now I owe an apology to the listeners, and I'm sorry. Yeah. We'll get a better microphone set up in future version of this studio.
That one's tough. At least you have the spitter guard on that guy though.
That's right.
That's a tough one to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, you have to like participate in the podcast. What I'm doing is I'm putting my face up
straight up in the air,
so I don't
into that guy. Yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah, a new toothbrush though feels really great.
You got to do it. There's a point at which
well, it's an investment, really.
Yeah, and you're wasting your time trying to clean the toothbrush, and when the bristles start to go out, and you're not getting a good brush. No. So I get it.
And I use the shit out of mine. Like my bristles are laying like corn after a hurricane.
And
I'm like, yeah, maybe I should get a new one.
All that Florida corn. But you painted a very visceral picture, and I can really picture your toothbrush.
You? Yeah.
I did. Yeah. But boy, we're way off topic from software engineering, folks. We'll get it back.
Oh, man.
And we'll find the segue. Give it time.
Now we're coming back to it. Hold on.
That's a thing that that's tough for me too, because I have not found out. Personally that like we try and do like a really low waste household. And
I do too, but I'm just really bad at it.
Well,
I'm a lot worse than you are.
We're not particularly good at it. I mean, we make a point to try and do it, but some shit's hard, and toothbrushes is one we just haven't fucking figured out. I mean, like even like we bought wooden toothbrushes, like so
it's in your mouth.
Yeah, so it tastes like putting wood in your mouth. You know when you were little and you went to the doctor and they used the popsicle stick that never had a popsicle on it?
Right.
And they put it on and it just tasted like dry fucking wood? That's what a wooden toothbrush is like. Don't recommend, even though it had regular bristles.
Right.
And the thing is that like I still got to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And the bristles were like, I don't think they were horsehair. I think it was nylon, and so it still had plastic in it. And so I was still, I was throwing out less plastic for sure, but it wasn't like totally zero waste. And so,
and you murdered a tree somewhere in the process.
That's a renewable resource. Okay. I'm about the efficiency of the process. I'm not a tree hugger, right? Yeah. I don't mind that trees fall. That's normal.
That's a hard one to me.
Really?
Yeah. I like the trees a lot.
See, I would rather knock a tree over and plant a couple to replace it. As long as we're doing that, that's important. That's a separate process.
I can agree on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I would much rather do that than mine petroleum out of the ground and create plastic that's not going to biodegrade over 10,000 years.
You know what I like even better?
What's that?
Let's legalize the hemp, and then we don't even have to cut down the trees.
That's true.
We just cut down the hemp that grows back like in 3 months.
It's a versatile thing.
It is. There are other uses, and we won't get into that.
Right, but maybe there's a toothbrush solution there. So anyway,
exactly. That's what I was thinking.
I'm looking at Equip, and maybe I'm going to do that. But still, there is not a good solution that I've found to not throw toothbrushes away every couple months.
I'm doing the Aqua Floss.
Oh, I do have a water pick.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's a good deal. Yeah, a good deal. Yeah, that is. Although I don't know how much, fucking dental floss you have to offset to make up for the enormous like plastic body of that
and
water pick.
I don't know how efficient and quick I'm supposed to be, but not enough. So I have to fill up the thing like twice.
Yeah.
While I'm using
it. Every time I use it, if this helps, and if this helps our listeners who also don't know if they're using their water pick correctly.
Yeah.
I would get like when I got good at it, it was like I felt like a good floss was the entire reservoir of water.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I will not necessarily a fill up, but it certainly wasn't going to get you through the week or something like that.
Right. Right.
Which is fine. I don't really want stagnant water reservoir from 5 days ago.
No.
I like the idea of it being fresh, right? That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we never found our segue, but
Those AWS bills, speaking of subscriptions.
Yeah. True that.
Know, that's
a good, yeah. I'll take it.
Right.
You know what I did? I sunset an AWS Elasticsearch cluster. Mm. In favor of an Elastic, the company now has their own hosted cluster, which is running on AWS, and it's like way fucking cheaper, like crazy cheaper. And I assume they're doing it. I assume they're getting scale out of spot instances and like Kubernetes or some sort of container orchestration where they're able to, you know, they sell it as if you were buying, like compute resources. You're like getting three machines of this size. But if you read it carefully, it's structured where like you're getting the resources, like it's not an actual AWS EC2 instance class. It's a class type that Elastic has designed, you know, like an Elasticsearch, you know, Excel. But it's an amount of computing resources. It's not necessarily all in one resource, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know how else they've gotten it at such a cost-effective way. Because I can scale it up on demand. So they're not like buying spot instances for my use.
Right.
Or maybe they found a clever way to recycle them internally. I don't know what they've done, but man, we have a cluster running for like $150 a month.
And the dashboard is super
slick.
Sweet.
Yeah, and like you can resize it and scale it, and like you can't actually resize an Elasticsearch cluster. What you have to do is stand up a new cluster and migrate the data to it, and then sunset the old cluster.
Which is great to have something else do that for you.
No shit, right? And it's seamless. You just mash the button and it goes. And
right.
I want to say that what we're paying like $150 a month for, from Elastic's cloud service, we would be paying like well in excess of $400 or $500 a month for on AWS.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
It is. And, you know, but we were doing that because our first Elasticsearch cluster that we ran, I say cluster, it was on a machine.
One node cluster that always had yellow health, right?
Yes, it was. Well, and before that, we were running one on a web node with a web app.
Yeah. Lesson learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it's all Java apps, but but that Java
that
app.
That one certainly uses some resources.
Yeah, well, and it'll just keep, I know Java by default will do anything, but as a service, Elasticsearch will happily consume all of your memory until it OOMs and
chokes
dies.
The web app and everything. And
does nothing to stop that from happening. It crashes and burns.
And maybe you can configure that and whatnot, but, you know, that's... I would rather pay for that service.
The way you configure it is you have multiple and you set up your sharding in such a way. But if you're running a single node and there's nowhere to put data when you run out of memory, it's a good thing about Elasticsearch. It doesn't say, nah, I don't want that data. It'll probably write it too, because it writes to disk, but the index in memory may crash and Elasticsearch may crash, at which point you're no longer writing to it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still broken, but at least it attempts to write.
Mm-hmm.
It's not MongoDB. It's like, how about I keep every other one of these? And then the rest I'll just, I'll send those to DevNull.
Mm.
Probably not that important. This is a toy app, right?
Yeah.
And you are using MongoDB.
Yeah, as your persistence layer.
that's been super cool. It was a while ago that we said, well, we'll never run our own Elasticsearch cluster again.
Yep.
And at that time we decided we'll use, AWS's offering, which we did for a while. We've still got a couple apps that run with it.
We do.
But now that I've found, the one downside to it, here's the ultimate downside, is to use, and they may well have a solution of launching this within your own VPC, but just right out of the box,
you are
communicating directly. You're going across the internet to your Elasticsearch cluster.
Yeah.
It's all over SSL.
Right.
Right. But it's encrypted, but it's, so it may be less of a security issue really in practice and more of a latency issue of not having local network traffic. But I haven't dug in this toolbar that far. You probably can launch it within your VPC.
See, so when AWS first offered that, you couldn't install it in your VPC.
You couldn't launch it in a VPC.
Right.
There are some apps in
it.
There's
in
other
a
stuff.
VPC.
Yeah, just not yours, right?
Right?
You got a private one.
Yeah. And so I remember having to come up with some clever policies that, that JSON
because you had to
object.
you had to open network traffic to the whole internet, but limit it to case limit it to machines that were in like a private subnet,
right?
That actually weren't internet routable typically.
Yeah, so I could use that ARN or whatever the
resource ID.
Yeah. And only open it up to that resource. So, I mean, it's secure, but God, that was a pain in the ass.
And undocumented.
Yeah. Right? No, that exactly. That's that was trial and error. And I may have found an obscure blog post that said something about that.
Gave a hint or something.
Yeah, I can't remember. But I remember what was so great is the day I figured that out and got that working, I was so happy. And in my mind, it feels like it was moments later. or maybe even in the process, Hayden like messages me in Slack and with a big grinning emoji of like, oh, check this out. They were like brand new. Now you can stand it up in your own VPC.
Oh, that's right. It was a new so feature. It's so crazy. Thanks, Amazon. Thanks, we were just talking about this today.
How they launch stuff.
They
like,
launch a new service that's production ready. It is bare fucking bones and like production ready.
Subjective.
I mean, it's production ready for what it is, but it probably doesn't have all the features of what it stands to replace.
Yep.
Like we haven't used EKS yet.
Right.
We have stood up Kubernetes on our own hardware in AWS and run it just fine.
Yep.
EKS is, you know, they basically, AWS runs the masternodes for you.
Right.
And you
throw containers at their container service.
You pay a service fee for infinite scalability essentially on the masternodes, and then you pay for the underlying hardware or the worker nodes, which sounds cool, but it's still pretty new, and I have good reason to believe that it's probably not feature complete with. Probably not the latest version of Kubernetes masternodes. Like that's pretty typical of a new AWS service. So a lot of people in the AWS subreddit will say like, "Ooh, new feature, cool! Can't wait to use that in 2 years." Mm-hmm. You know, when it's actually ready. I don't know. I can't find a single example of anyone getting their ETL service to work. That was production ready. It had only been out for like 2 months and we tried to use it for something and it just like was not happening at all. Every step along the way was a fight. It was just like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Python ODBC. Here we go. You know? Yep.
Oh man. Yeah. We thought that was going to be just a life changer.
Yeah. It should have been.
It should have been.
Because we sure did scope it only taking 2 days in that project because we were going to use that AWS service and we spent like 2 weeks writing our own ETL process in Python because lesson learned. But
yeah.
That was a scoping problem. That was a contract problem. But was not ready for Prime. I haven't tried it since, but
no.
It was not ready then.
Because we, you know, we've written quite a few ETLs and, you know, I mean, I won't say we're good at it, but, you know, we're better than... better than some.
Is that line from the 40-Year-Old Virgin where Seth Rogen says, like, I won't say what he's referring to. If you've seen the movie, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, and at that point, you'll probably be not awful at it.
Yeah.
But probably still pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then maybe that's where we've arrived on ETL processes.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've built quite a few.
We have. You know, it's you know, the difficult thing is because they don't, they're not identical.
There's always it's absolutely well. I mean, we build them to suit, and they tend to be very esoteric to what they're working with.
Yeah.
There are generalized ETL solutions,
like
IBM provides them and stuff like that. They're off the shelf, and they have benchmarks that they move data super fast. But it's a generalized solution, and so like the integration layers suck. Like they're always terrible, and it's never like you're writing a bunch of scripts and a bunch of ridiculous mappings and then the ETL solution like clobbers the database you're sending it into because it just like fires it through. So
all this data here now.
Yeah. And so there are off the shelf solutions. We don't build them that way. We tend to make them, you know, kind of specific to the use case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm ready to go not write code, despite the fact that we still have some performance issues to iron out on a product. I'm looking forward to having a weekend of not crisis in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long couple of days.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, 1,000 yards. Yeah. And on that note,
I'm still looking at the dashboard.
You're still looking at it. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that's an episode.
That's a podcast.
Yeah, let's get out here and finish this up so we can go home.
I'm going to go mow my grass.
Oh, that sounds good. All right, well, we'll see you guys in a week.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty Labs. If you enjoyed the show, you can subscribe to future episodes via iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. You can also follow at Friday Deploy on Facebook and Twitter for episode previews, live streams, and other behind-the-scenes peeks. Past episodes and show notes on this episode can be found at friday.hirelofty.com. That's friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to contact the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and would like to be a guest on the show, you can email us at podcast@hirelofty.com.